Last month, results of an international standard test in math, science, and reading revealed some perhaps not so startling results. In Shanghai, 5,115-year-olds outperformed their peers in 65 countries. And where did the United States rank? Between 15th and 31st in all three categories. Much can be argued about the method and variables of this form of testing, but for parents like Yale Law Professor Amy Chua, the Chinese advantage is a direct reflection of the country's culture of parenting. When she had her children, Ms. Chua, a second-generation Chinese-American, felt there was only one way to raise them, the Chinese way. In her latest book, Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother, she reflects on the successes, failures, and struggles that resulted from making that decision. Her book is published by Penguin Press, and I'm pleased to welcome Amy Chua to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thanks so much.
My guess is that these numbers didn't surprise you at all.
They didn't surprise me, but I do want to say that my book isn't it's not a parenting book. It's not a how-to book and how to improve scores book. It's really a memoir. It's just my family story, and in many ways, it's the story of my own transformation. As you say, I hit some big obstacles, and so the book is about many of the strengths that I see in this kind of parenting, but also about my mistakes, and it's making fun of me, and about how I ultimately had to pull back.
And in fact, you tell some stories, which we'll get to later, that I was rather horrified by, especially the birthday card story, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, I can't believe that. That's a funny story in our family, but it's all in the context.
You write about three big differences between Chinese and Western mindsets when it comes to education. What are they?
Well, the sort of the most central one, I think, is I think that Western parents are much more concerned about their children's self-esteem. They worry about it all the time, whereas Chinese parents – this has been the source of some problem for me. I'm using this term Chinese parent or Chinese very, very loosely. In the first page of my book, I explained that I was talking to a guy from South Dakota, and he, after talking with him, he and I decided that his working class Irish father had been a Chinese mother. And I think it's more of an immigrant thing. You know, I know lots of parents from Korea, India, Pakistan, Nigeria who do the same thing. But by conversely, many, many Chinese people don't choose this kind of parenting. But I do think that just using this term loosely, I think that Chinese parents assume strength, or immigrant parents assume strength rather than fragility. So as a result, they behave very differently. And I think it raises a real interesting question of how you give true self-esteem to a child. I know there's, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you're just obsessed with A's and achievements. And for me personally, I think that love and compassion have to come first. And the way, you know, I had very strict but very loving Chinese immigrant parents. And the way I took the message was not, you know, you have to get A's or, you know, we won't love you. It was always, we believe in you so much that we know you can be excellent. And we're going to be in there in the trenches, and we're not going to let you give up.
But didn't your father tell you not to humiliate him again when he went to an award ceremony where you weren't the top of the top?
That's the story. I use that to prove just the opposite point. When I was in eighth grade, I won second place in a history contest. And I brought my parents to the award ceremony. And somebody else had won best all-around student. And afterwards, my father said, never, ever disgrace me like that again. And when I tell my Western friends this, they are all horrified. You know, what kind of a man? But they completely misunderstand. I adore my father. I knew exactly how much he thought of me, you know, and so it's all in the context. And I knew what he was saying to me was, look, I know you can do better. I believe in you. And that's how I took it. It was just, you know, to this day, he's my major source of strength.
I know you're not talking about specifically about how things are taught in China, but they are connected. And some educators point out that the Chinese method relies heavily on rote learning. That's something American educators have rejected because it, well, among other things, only has temporary results. You score well on the test, and the kids have repeated what the teacher said 300 times. They score well on the test, and then it flies out of their heads afterward.
Right.
You want them to be more engaged.
Yeah, I think there's a better way of thinking about this because I totally agree. You know, I don't think rote memorization is good. I of course, we want to encourage independent thinking, but I write about what I call the virtuous circle, which is, you know, I think it's pretty clear that many things are not fun until you're good at it, you know, and to be good at something requires this initial period of just kind of practice. It's like the American adage, practice makes perfect. You know, so just to give you an example, my daughter came home with a poor test when she was in fifth grade and she announced, I hate math. I'm bad at math. Now, I think a Western parent might have said, okay, you know, a lot of people aren't good at math, you know, pursue your dreams. I went the Chinese way and I said, no, you know, how can you know that? I made all these practice tests. I drilled them with her, but only for a week. Very comic in my book with a stopwatch. And after a week, she did really well on the next test. And guess what? She said, you know what? I like math. And so then that encouraged her to work more. So I'm not in favor of rote memorization, but I think, you know, you need that initial basis before you can decide whether you're really good at something.
I guess I react poorly to some of this because of my own personal experience. My father was rather rigid in these areas. When I was doing poorly in math and had went over the multiplication tables with him, he said, okay, 3 times 7. And I said, 3 times 7 is, he said, no, don't repeat the question. So we went on and again, I repeated it. And he got really annoyed with me. And the third time I repeated it, 8 times 7 is, he slapped my face. And I said, okay. I'll never
right.
study with you again.
Well, you know, Leonard, you know that my book is actually supporting your point. I mean, my second daughter, I have two daughters, and I tried to raise them both the same way my parents raised me because I adore my parents. You know,
your father went to MIT when you were a kid?
Yes.
And, what was he studying?
He electrical engineering. And, you know, my parents arrived in this country so poor they couldn't afford heat the first two winters in Boston. And they were very strict but extremely loving. And I think that's the difference. Every family's different. If you are – my parents having had high expectations for me, coupled with love, was the greatest gift they could give me. For other people, if you don't feel that love and support, I think it's just horrifying, you know. But I will say that my daughter was just like you. My second daughter, my rebel, she refused to count in the normal way. She wanted to count, you know, 2, 7, 16. I mean, but I knew she was smart. And in the end, I love that about her. I mean, she's just very creative. But and that's, of course, what the book is about. In the end, we had a showdown and I was making too many choices for her. And I, rather than lose her, I gave in.
But if as so many parents of the sort you're talking about insist that their kids get nothing less than an A in their class and often, judging from some of the stories you tell, guilt trip their children, that puts a fairly heavy psychological burden on a young child.
I really look at it very differently. I agree with you. You have to look at you have to know your child and you have to listen to your child. So, you know, these stories, you know, are putting so much pressure on your child that they can't take it or getting, you know, that's just terrible. I'm against that. But I think if you show, I mean, for me at best, it really is about helping your child be the best that they can be. And believing in them more, in a way, almost more than themselves, you know. And I really think that that's what comes first. And if it's not experienced as that, if it's experienced as like you've got to get the A or else you don't belong here, then I actually disagree with that.
Well, you went to school in Boston. You were with kids. You weren't going to a Chinese majority school, I suspect.
Oh, I went to school actually in the Midwest when I was little, a public school. I think I was the only Chinese kid there.
So you were surrounded by kids with very different upbringings.
Yeah.
And they didn't have an influence on you at all?
Oh, sure. I mean, the book is very ironic. And I mean, it's a very complex book, actually, because I say that I'm in favor. At the beginning, it opens. You have to get A's in violin or piano. But what it is, the book is a memoir. It's really a satirical journey, my own journey. And so the voice that is talking at the beginning, this kind of obtuse, almost, you know, arrogant voice, is really gets her comeuppance. And at the end of the book, I'm a very different person. So I myself am a hybrid. You know, I'm not an immigrant. And I think that's partly what I learned. Geez, like, I couldn't do what my parents did. And
well,
I married a Jewish guy.
and what was his response to all the rules that you set up initially?
We have a really good marriage. He grew up in a very permissive, liberal family. He loves his parents. But he, in some ways, shared some of my values. He favored some more you know, he always regretted that somebody hadn't forced him to learn a musical instrument when he was little. He was given the choice. Do you want to go play with your friends or learn the violin? Play with my friends is his choice, you know. And he wishes he'd learned a foreign language. But he always, even though he supported me, he brought balance to our household. He made us go to, you know, Yankees games and, you know, water parks and all these things. I was always thinking it's a waste of time. But in retrospect, I think it's what made our household, you know, fun and normal. And so it really was not a pure tough immigrant model.
Amy Chua is my guest. She's the John F. Duff, M. Duff Professor of Law at Yale Law School. First book, World on Fire, was a New York Times bestseller. Her second book was Day of Empire. This one, her latest, is a memoir called Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. It is published by Penguin. Most people agree that there is need for discipline with children, but when it's enforced in the way that creativity, self-expression, and choice are not tolerated, you're raising your child to basically obey, memorize, and not question authority, which is something that I do associate with cultures like the Chinese, because that's what Confucianism, to some degree, is calling for,
right?
Isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, I was raised by very strict Chinese immigrant parents where I did a lot of drilling. My father is the most creative person I know. He's a maverick. He, you know, invented the memristor and chaos theory. I don't feel that I am a meek robot. I've written two very incendiary books. I'm in a lot of trouble right now. So I think you can't make these generalizations. You know, I agree that every family is different. And I think there must be some balance. I mean, this is where I'm coming out, right? There's got to be some balance somewhere in between the what I see as almost overly permissive coddling Western approach now, where, you know, in a way, I don't think you're going to produce self-reliant kids, you know, because if you're, they're going to have to go out into the real world at some point. You can tell them you're great at all you want, but at some point when they go out and, you know, don't do well or can't get the job they want, you know, American or Westerners talk about pursue your passion. Well, what if you go out there and you can't get the job you want and you can't pursue your passion, right? You need the foundation and the work ethic and the sort of inner strength that I feel that my parents instilled in me, actually, the sort of tenacity to don't give up.
Well, you had a foreign affairs bestseller recently. I spoke to somebody from foreign affairs who wrote a book about how China may be doing very well. Its economy is booming, but he said it will never surpass the West because of innovation unless the Chinese figure out how to change the way they teach their children and encourage innovation.
You know what's funny? I actually agree with that. My other book, that's the punchline of my previous book too. I think that China does have that, but for a different reason. I think that America is vibrant and always has been in large part because of its immigrants, you know, what do these immigrants bring? Some of them actually do bring a work ethic of the kind that you're sort of being critical of, this kind of tenacity. But they also, there's something self-selected. You know, people come here and they're suddenly one foot in two cultures. I think it's a very dynamic and vibrant and sort of strange. You know, you have this work ethic, but you also have these parents that are poor that can talk tough to you. Sometimes it doesn't work. You're right. I mean, I know people who are scarred by that. But other times it's like a beautiful combination, which is you both grow into Americans together. My parents changed so much. You know, I mean, they told me you'll marry a non-Chinese over my dead body. That's what my father said. I married a Jewish guy. They're the best of friends. You know, I mean, everyone grows up.
You are painfully honest in this book, as you pointed out, to the point of making yourself appear at times out of control, neurotic, obsessive. Was it a struggle to reveal yourself in that way?
Well, I kind of love the book, and I hope people get it. Some people do get it. If you get it, it's very funny, and it's a little bit tricky. You know, I love books with unreliable narrators. See, I don't think you can believe every word that I say, you know? So I give my kids all the best lines, right? Like, you're insane. You're frothing at the mouth. You know, but of course, I'm writing the book. I mean, they approved it all happened. So it's a little bit, you know, when I say, I don't care if my kids hate me, and then I don't care if I remind them of Lord Voldemort. Of course I care. Who wants to be Lord Voldemort?
Well, right? your older daughter, Sophia, was, for the most part, obedient to all of your demands. She's a good student, a gifted pianist. As she got older, she said she went along with you by choice.
Oh, she's a huge personality. This is another where I'm resisting. You know, I was very strict with her, and my two daughters are the most gregarious, outgoing, creative, independent-minded girls. I mean, as you can see, they're just smart Alex throughout the book, constantly putting me in my place, you know.
Well, let's talk about that birthday card. What happened at the restaurant after your youngest daughter, Louisa, who you call Lulu,
yeah,
gave you a homemade birthday card.
Okay. So I, we were, it was my birthday. My husband had forgotten about it and took us to, you know, sort of a mediocre Italian restaurant at the last minute. And he said, okay,
girls. If he'd been raised in the Chinese way, do you think he would have remembered?
I don't know. My dad always forgets. I think that's universal. But, you know, my daughters were 4 and 7. And he said, okay, girls, bring out your surprises. And Lulu, my 4-year-old, gave me a card that was It was a piece of paper folded in half. This has been taken out of context. It's a beautiful handmade card. It was actually a piece of paper folded in half with a happy face. I took it and I looked at it and I gave it back to her. I said, you know, Lulu, this is not good enough.
She's
4 years old. And I said, your last two birthday parties, I hired clowns and magicians. I spent my entire salary. I want something better. And we talk, and you know, people said, oh my God, you're destroying your self-esteem. In my family, this is the funniest story. Lulu now says she felt so much better about herself doing a good job. I mean, it only took her 5 minutes as opposed to 3 seconds. But I have a treasure box. I keep these cards. I said, you know, put some thought into it. And I know I'm getting in trouble for this, but I think it's all in the context. You know, if you're a brutal, uncaring parent and you say this, that would be horrible. But in our family, where my kids know I love them, they know I'm funny and joke around and I'm outrageous. They just, you know, they're outrageous right back. And now, I mean, you know, I think it builds character. I think we have we have to worry about a society of these over entitled, pampered kids. I didn't want to raise kids. Just buy me more, more, more. My friends have iPods. Buy me this. I feel like, you know, my parents raised me to feel respect and gratitude for them, and they earned it. You know, I mean, maybe some people don't earn it, but my parents earned it. And I feel that I earned it. I think it's a difference. My husband said, I don't think kids owe their parents duties. I mean, they didn't even choose to be born. You know, we owe them duties. That's just not the way that I was raised. I feel that, you know, children owe their parents duties as well, you know, of respect and love and gratitude. And it's worked out well for us, I have to tell you.
How does this work when you're teaching law?
Oh, I'm so inconsistent. This is so terrible. I have so many
students.
Isn't
there great inflation these days in all universities?
Yeah, but
Does everybody get an A?
Well, this is the ironic thing. I, at school, at Yale, I am the most supportive and nurturing. I am not an authoritarian professor. I don't know why. And especially with my students who were raised the same way that I was, that is, who had very strict immigrant parents, I'm actually their counselor and their friend. So go figure. I mean, I guess it's because I really believe in a hybrid too. And I understand both sides.
And there are moments in this book that would probably make many Western parents cringe. But you write that Chinese parents are just as horrified at the Western parenting style.
Yeah,
bothers them the most?
I'm using those terms very generally.
Are people who apply discipline in every group.
Sure, okay.
Some to the point where they pull out a belt sometimes.
Oh, no, I don't agree with that. Here's what I meant by that. I think, you know, I know a lot of very permissive parents are horrified. Oh, my gosh, you know, she did this. But I know a lot of immigrant and actually Chinese parents who are very put off and shocked by what Westerners let their children do. You know, I mean, how, you know, some of these parties, the drug abuse, teenage pregnancy, how much time they let them waste. I mean, Facebook and reality TV for hours. I mean, and also how poorly they prepare them for the future. This goes back to where you started.
Well, I lived in Chinatown in New York for 25 years, and I saw teenage pregnancy. I saw teenage drug
Absolutely.
Use.
Absolutely. Chinatown is very different. In my book, I'm very clear that I'm not talking about all Chinese people. This is really immigrants were fortunate enough to come here as graduate students or skilled workers, you know, so whether you're Korean or Nigerian or Chinese. My dad came as a graduate student, and of course I was lucky enough to have that background.
Inevitably, a parent must let go, whether that's at 18 or after college or when the kid goes out to get married. Your kids can do pretty much whatever they want to do.
Yeah, and I believe that, and I guess I think that one way I would summarize the difference, overgeneralizing, is I think Westerners, you know, we all want our kids to be happy and to grow up to be strong and self-reliant. I think we all want the same thing, but there are just different ways we go about doing that. And in general, I think Westerners want to promote individuality and, you know, kind of be nurturing. I think the Chinese, or at least immigrants, they think that the best way to protect their children is by showing them what they're capable of, not giving up on them, and sort of arming them with the skills and inner confidence and kind of work ethic that no one can ever take away.
I forgot to mention the two dogs. Are you tough on the dogs, or were you?
No. The title, I mean, the opening line is, this is a story about a mother, two daughters, and two dogs. And they play into this, too, because I'm the most pathetic dog parent. I can't train my dogs to do anything. They run my life.
And you write also, it was supposed to be a story of how Chinese parents are better at raising their kids than Western ones, but that's not the way it turned out.
No, it says, but instead it's how I was humbled by my 13-year-old.
Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother is published by Penguin Press, and my great thanks to Amy Chua for being my guest today.
Thanks so much for having me.